Good evening. I come to you again, once more, by tape. We're making two sides tonight. It's Friday night. You'll be listening to this on Sunday night. We've had a little rain this week, and I know that you've taken time in the testimony meeting that precedes our time of study to thank the Lord for His blessings and for all that He's done for you during the weeks. That you've testified as to His love and prayed one for another and prayed for your pastor. Now it's time to turn to the Word of God, and we come to Genesis chapter 41 tonight. Now while you're turning, I'll remind you of what we had last week and the week before. The study concerning Joseph and his early life, his being sold into slavery in Egypt and his settling in the home of a ruler in Egypt and then ending up in jail. And if you recall last week, he had interpreted two dreams for a baker and for a butler from the house or the palace of Pharaoh. They had related their dreams to Joseph. They were quite concerned about him, and Joseph interpreted these dreams. The butler was to be killed. He was to have his head cut off, hung on a tree, and the birds would eat his flesh. That was a baker. And the butler would be restored as chief butler of Pharaoh and his place of honor again. And when this came about, Joseph reminded the butler that when he had a chance, he was to use his influence, if he could, in Joseph's behalf. Now, that brings us to chapter 41. And beginning in verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass at the end of two full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river, and behold, there came up out of the river seven well-favored kine, and fat-fleshed, and they fed in a meadow. And behold, seven other kind came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the river, by the other kind upon the bank, or the brink of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed kind did eat up the seven well-favored and fat kind. So Pharaoh awoke. And he slept and dreamed a second time. And behold, seven ears of corn came upon one stalk, rank and good. And behold, seven thin ears, and blasted with the east wind, sprang up after them. And the seven thin ears devoured the seven rank and full ears, and Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream." All right, two dreams, very vivid dreams. Now, verse 1 says it came to pass at the end of two full years, and we can get some discussion about just exactly what 2 years is referred to. Was it from the time Joseph was originally thrown into jail, or from the time that the butler was released and restored to favor? Any way you look at it, it's 2 years of wondering what God might have in mind. Why would God do this to me? Now, you know, there's something that we need to examine and think about here. We know that God orders the steps of His children. The older I get, and I thank God I'm getting older, I guess, the easier it is to look back and see where God has straightened the path and smoothed the bumps as we look back. And we can see how the path has led us to where we are. We can look back and see where God has put an obstacle in the way and made us turn from the way we were going and go into what at that time seemed a new and unfamiliar path. Still, use of God to lead us to the point we are today. And it's not wrong to say, well, why? Why all of this? I think we have to stop and ask God, why are you interested in me? You know, as we grow in our Christian experience, we recognize that from the physical viewpoint, from the viewpoint of time, we don't amount to much. There isn't much that either you or I or all of us together can accomplish. But God, again I say it, has chosen to use the likes of you and I. He takes the weak things. He takes the things of little reputation, and he accomplishes mighty things. And I don't know how many times I've said it in recent weeks. I don't know whether I said it this morning or not. But I'm trying hard to hold still to see what God's going to do. I live expectantly. I want to know what God's going to do. I know He has something in mind. I know that eventually, somewhere down the road, we're going to turn and look back again and say, oh my, wasn't that a mighty and wondrous thing that God did in us and with us and through us. And my friends, when we get to heaven and we look back through all of this life that God has given us and see the twists and the turns and the straightenings of the path that God has arranged, His providence for you and I, we are going to be totally fascinated. And God's wisdom, His knowledge, His ability. Look at Joseph here. Thrown down in a pit to be left for dead. Then extracted and sold into slavery, carried into Egypt, bounced around from pillar to post, and ends up in jail. Spends 2 years there thinking, why is God doing this? What have I done to deserve it? Well, I could ask another question. What have you done to avoid it? What have you done to avoid deserving it? I don't think very many of us ever get what we really deserve. I don't care what the difficulties are in life. If the Christian can change his viewpoint and say, oh, no, I didn't do anything to deserve this, you know. We always want to look back and make excuses. And as we go forward in the next few chapters, we're going to see how God changes the attitudes of a whole family. But, you know, if we stop this business saying, well, what's God picking on me for? And just stop and be still and say, all right, Lord, I don't understand it. I don't know. I know that if I let you do it, it's going to work out for my good and for your honor and glory. I think God permitted us to whisper under our breath, we're ready now, Lord. We're willing. Get to it. I don't think that insults Him. He made us. He understands our impatience. And admittedly, sometimes we get a little too impatient. He makes us wait a little longer. But God has the time. God has the place. He knows what He's doing. He also understands our impatience in the flesh. Now, look at Joseph. At least 2 years in prison, maybe 2+ years. Maybe 2 years from the time the butler got out. He has to sit there and wait. All right. Now, the king goes to bed, and he has a couple of dreams. They must have been extremely vivid dreams. He remembered the details. Now, let me ask you a question. Science tells us that each and every one of us dreams. Every night when we go to bed, it's normal for us to dream. But I'll ask you the question. How much of your dreaming can you really remember? I know there was a long period in my life. I knew that I had dreamed, but I couldn't remember any details 10 minutes after I woke up. Lately, I can remember some details. I'll wake up and maybe 3 or 4 times in a night, and I'll think, well, that was a dream. And then I begin to dwell on what the dream was. I kind of get a kick out of it sometimes. They're kind of fantastic. And they tell us that dreams in our lives have a purpose. I don't know. To believe anxieties and work out some of our problems. We do it in our sleep, and these answers come out through dreams. Now, this type of dreaming isn't a divine revelation from God. It's just something that God has planted in us that allows us to work certain things out. But here, these dreams were so plain, so vivid, when the man woke up, he could remember all of the details of them. They were plain and they were simple. 7 water buffalo coming up out of the River Nile. the source of all of the Egyptians' life and wealth, the River Nile. And water buffalo, in the heat of the day, down in the water, and then as they come up out of the water, they appear to be rising out of the water, that their source is out of the water. And they come to the shore, and they feed on the grass, and here are seven beautiful, fat, healthy-looking water buffalo. And then comes along seven more up out of the river, and they're skinny and ill-looking, ill-fed, lean-fleshed. And if you look at verse 4, a little ill-favored, and they eat up the seven well-favored, the fat water buffalo. Kind of mean and vicious. Then Pharaoh wakes up. He makes note of the dream, apparently, and then he lays his head back down and dreams a second dream. 7 ears of corn. All on, now, this is Egyptian wheat. Seven heads of wheat, literally, on one stalk, or coming up from one seed, one root formation. That would be pretty good. I don't know how many of you ever planted wheat, but and I'm not too familiar with it, but I don't think you normally see more than one stalk come out of one root combination. I know that sometimes when two seed fall on the ground close together, you'll get two stalks that come up adjoining, and the roots are intertwined, and it will look almost like one plant. But a very unusual type of wheat. Seven heads of wheat, a good, fat, full heads of wheat on each stalk. And then a little later comes up seven thin ears, blasted with the east wind, burned with a drought. And they end up doing the same thing the seven water buffalo did. They end up eating or devouring or absorbing, is the way some of the commentaries comment on it. They absorb the seven good ears of corn. Now, Pharaoh woke up and found out it was a dream. Now, he was concerned about this. The people in that time, in a dream that became so apparently plain, meaning was attributed to it. And there were men who, there still are men today, I think, to do it. In fact, one of the local papers is had been putting out a series of articles on dreams, and I just ignored them. I didn't read them, but I noticed that as I go through the paper for a number of nights, there would be a section devoted to dreams, meaning I know it was headed with the dreams of children, this kind of dream and that kind of dream, but I didn't get the details. So people put a lot of importance upon their dreams, and some people get quite superstitious about it. Now, you put brackets around that word superstitious, because in this particular instance, it's recorded in the Word of God, and it's obvious that God is setting up a set of circumstances and using these dreams, these two dreams, to accomplish his purpose with and through Joseph. Now, morning comes along, and Pharaoh is quite upset with these dreams. Here's something that he can't interpret, has no understanding of at all, and he wants to know what it's all about. So he calls all the wise men and the magicians, those who are specialized in the interpreting of dreams and telling fortunes and so forth, and there wasn't a one of them that could interpret the dream. Now, you know, we don't put much weight on astrology, but I wonder how many of you would ever read the astrology columns that appear in the daily newspaper. You know, if you think about what you're reading when you look at those things, they're quite ambiguous. They don't get down to details, really. On the surface, you might seem to, but there are so many ways to interpret these predictions that almost anything that happens to you in a given day, if you want to stretch your imagination a little bit, could be fit into the interpretation given by the astrologer beforehand. Same thing would apply to the interpreting of dreams, but these dreams were so unusual that they were difficult. They couldn't come up with a suitable type of answer that they felt confident about giving to Pharaoh. So there they are. Pharaoh's got two dreams and they can't interpret them. So verse 9, new paragraph here. Then, and only then, spoke the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, "Hey, I do remember my faults this day. I've been goofing. I made a mistake. I remember when Pharaoh was angry with his servants, and he put me in jail in the captain's guardhouse, both me and the chief baker, and we each had a dream in one night, and he and I, and we looked for an interpretation of that dream." That's what it's saying. "And there was there with us a young man, a Hebrew, servant to the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams, to each man according to his dream he did interpret. And it came to pass, as he interpreted to us, so it was. Me he restored unto mine office, and him he hanged." Kind of speaking in the second person there, because it's the same king, I'm sure. A little off-handed there. But the thing you have to remember, apparently a period of time has passed, and you kind of wonder about the man's motivations. He could have said, let's look at it several ways. He could have said something about Joseph at any time. You could fault him for delay. You could say that this was a chance that he could get into Pharaoh's good favor by referring him to Joseph if Joseph should come up with the right answers. And if Joseph goofed, why, it wouldn't be any harm to him. It was Joseph that failed, not the butler. So it could have been an ideal time from his viewpoint and to his benefit to make mention of Joseph. On the other hand, it's entirely possible that this was the first real opportunity to say something that would bring Joseph to the attention of Pharaoh in a favorable manner. You have to realize that these kings in those times had absolute power of life and death, and if they weren't pleased, that was it for you. And so the butler could have really kind of hung himself if he had said the wrong thing at the wrong time. I'm inclined to argue with the commentaries a little bit and judge the man gently. This may have been the first real opportunity. We don't hear any more about him. Verse 14, we find that Pharaoh listened, and apparently the butler did a pretty fair sales talk, and more than that, Pharaoh at this stage must have been getting a little bit desperate. He couldn't find anyone else to interpret the dream, and that made it all the more pressing upon him. If you can't find the answer when you want it, you're all the more upset in looking for it. It might start off as a very minor thing. I got a couple of dreams, and I wonder what they mean, and you get all of the powers that be, that are supposed to be the authorities on the matter, and you gather them together, and they scratch their heads and say, "I can't tell you." That makes you all the more curious, doesn't it? All right. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and they took him out of the jail, and he shaved himself, changed his clothes, and came unto Pharaoh. He shaved his face and his head, they tell me, that this was the custom at that stage in Egyptian history. If you look at some of the photos, you'll notice that a lot of the men had no hair. They were bald with maybe a little tiny goatee. And usually the men with the goatee were the high-ranking officers, Pharaoh and so forth. But Egypt was the one area at that time where it was fashionable, proper, appropriate to go barefaced and bareheaded. The other countries went with full beards and long hair and so forth. In any case, Joseph was prepared to be presentable before Pharaoh. And verse 15 picks it up quick, and the story seems to move pretty fast. Pharaoh said unto Joseph, "I have dreamed a dream, and there isn't any that can interpret it. And I have heard it said of thee that thou canst understand a dream and interpret it." Now, very interesting point. "Joseph, I hear you're one individual that can interpret difficult dreams. You have a good reputation in this line, and I want to know what you think. Can you do it for me? All right, what does Joseph say? 16. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, It's not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Ooh, now, there is the way we're supposed to be. Joseph says, Man, I can't tell you anything. I don't know. I don't know what you've dreamed, and I don't have any answer. But I know this one thing. I feel that God will give you an answer that will bring you peace of mind. Very interesting. I wonder what caused him to give an answer that way. Well, maybe Joseph realized now is the time that God is getting ready to raise the curtain on the big act. What's really going to happen? Now, you know, all these things have come to a point, much like we feel here in Mariposa today. Everything's come to a head. Something's bound to happen now. God's ready. We know it. Now's the time. And Joseph is saying that. So if that's the case, I don't think it's going to hurt you. All right. Pharaoh says to Joseph, In my dream, I stood up on the bank of the river, and there came up out of the river seven water buffalo, kind, fat fleshed and well-favored. And he goes on and he tells the story. And repeating just exactly what was said in the other, with the exception, I think, of a little difference there in verse 21, additional detail. And when they had eaten them up, it could not be known that they had eaten them, but they were still ill-favored as in the beginning, so I awoke. And he goes on, and he tells a story about the 7 ears of wheat, and he says, I told this unto the magicians, verse 24, and there was none that could declare it or explain it to me. Now, Joseph takes over, verse 25. And Joseph said to Pharaoh, The dream of Pharaoh is one. In other words, the two dreams mean the same thing, therefore they're really repetitious. It's God speaking to you in two ways to tell you one set of facts. Now, God has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good water buffalo are 7 years, and the 7 good ears are 7 years, both the same period of time. The dream is one. And the 7 thin and ill-favored water buffalo that came up after them are 7 years, and the 7 empty ears blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he shows to Pharaoh. Once again, it's God speaking, it's God talking, it's God that's giving the interpretation, it's God that's going to do. It's all of God. And let me tell you something, friend. When God begins to move, you and I, we are invited to a front row box seat, but stand back and let God do it. Yeah, he may want to reach down and use your mouth. He may want to reach down and use your muscles. He may want to reach down and use the wisdom that he's given you. He may want to use your health, your energy, your wealth, your provisions. Oh, that hurts, doesn't it? Yes, but remember, what you own, you don't own. It belongs to God. What God's given you belongs to him. The very life you have is a gift of God. It belongs to him. It's his right to use it. And you can never, never on this earth ever be hurt by letting God do what he wants with what belongs to him. And there isn't anything you have that doesn't belong to him. Not if you really belong to the Lord. All right. So, again, God is about to do, what God is about to do, he shows to Pharaoh. Behold, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be 7 years of great plenty throughout all of the land of Egypt. And then after that, there's going to be 7 years of famine. and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and famine shall consume the land. I wish we'd had a Joseph here. We may be running into the middle of 7 years of drought and famine in this part of the country. I don't know. But anyway, we get back to what Joseph is saying. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of the famine that following, for it shall be very grievous. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now therefore, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Now, we have to recognize something here. God is stopping talking, and God is letting Joseph use the wisdom that God is giving. All right? You have to recognize the difference. In verse 32, he's saying, now, God has showed it to you twice, and that is firm proof that God has established it. There isn't anything that's going to change. You know, you can fall down on your knees and pray for rain, but it isn't going to happen, friend. God has said, this is what's going to happen. You've had fair warning. Now, get ready. Get ready, because God's going to do it. You know, there's a time to pray and to seek God's will and beseech the portals of heaven, but there's another time to stand up and start doing, realizing you're not doing it in the flesh, but God's going to be doing it in you. And once again, once God has revealed his plan, it's up to men to use what God has provided them with. Once we know the direction that God's going in, once we know that it's going to be 7 years of plenty, and that we'd better build some barns, and we'd better put aside, and we'd better store up, because it's going to come 7 years of hard times, we'd better use the smarts that God gave us. He has a reason for it. All right. That's verse 32. Now, up to that point, he's just simply revealing what God has established and giving the credit to God. Now, he switches gears in verse 33. And it could be worded this way. Now, I suggest, because it's him speaking now, he's taking liberties here, but I think that God is permitting it in order to establish his basic wisdom. I suggest that Pharaoh look out, find a real sharp guy with a lot of smarts, wise, and set him over the land of Egypt, make him ruler of over the whole land with one major task to do. Prepare for what's coming. You got 7 years to get ready. Don't waste it. Look around you, friends. Has God blessed you? Has he blessed you for a reason? Has he blessed you so that at a given time he can use what he's given you? Yeah, I've been through the school that God gives, and I'm still learning. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I've been through that bit of spinning it as fast as God gives it to me. And that's wrong. When God gives us more than what we really need, I think that God suggests and requires that we use some wisdom with what he's given us. Set it aside and be prepared to use it for him when he calls for it. If he doesn't call for it, then it takes care of you in your old age or provides whatever God wants you to have later. But it's good to build the barns and fill them. Not with the idea that we're going to, as a man in the New Testament, lay back and take our ease because God has been so good to us. No, I think that when God blesses us abundantly, it's an indication he's got something great for us to do and he's preparing us. You think about that for a while. Anyway, we have the suggestion that Joseph has made. Let Pharaoh do this thing. Let him appoint officers unto this man, in parentheses, understood, over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt and the seven plenteous years. In other words, literally apply a tax and or buy 20% of all that's produced in the country. The increase of the herds, the increase of the field, store it away, set it aside, preserve it, because